Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, January 30th, 2011. This is episode 740. Enjoy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 88. Ask Leo if you want to call me and talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater. This is your chance to do it. How are you today? Good to see you. I'm waiting for my engineers to fix the cameras. Yes, it's a radio show, but the cameras are important too. TechGuyLabs.com is the website. If you have a question about anything we've talked about, this would be a great place to go. Coming up in just a little bit, about 33 after the hour, my good friend Scott Wilkinson will stop by, talk about home theater. Scott's going to be here all day next week for all 3 hours of the show. He's filling in for me. Thank you, Scott. That'll be great. So save those home theater questions for Scott Wilkinson, because he is going to have a lot to say about home theater next week. Big tech IPO this week. I don't know. Do you care about stock market stuff like that? There's only been, this is the first tech, they call it initial public offering. It's when a tech company goes public, says we're going to sell stock. LinkedIn had its IPO and decided that they were worth a lot more than they had thought. In fact, maybe because there haven't been a lot of IPOs, not only this year, but in the last few years, stock market investors were very anxious, I think, to get in there. So they raised $175 million, and the stock price went up quickly. It actually, I think, has leveled out a little bit. I guess people are jumping on the Facebook thing, right? Nobody can buy Facebook stock yet. Rumors are that you'll be able to buy it next year. So I think that some of this is just people saying, well, I can't get Facebook, so I'll get, what else can I get? LinkedIn. Okay, I'll take it. Which doesn't seem like perhaps a very good investing idea, but then that's the stock market in a nutshell. Do you have a new friend on Facebook? Did Roy Castillo stop by your, I didn't get it, but apparently somebody hacked Facebook. First, they hacked Mark Zuckerberg's page. I don't know if it was related. And then they did a weird and interesting hack, kind of hard to believe, in which a mysterious person shows up on your friends list and announces that he's off to Danau City. Like, it's in your stream. Like, I don't know this person. What? Roy Castillo. He disappeared as quickly as he came, I think because Facebook said, wait a minute. Something's wrong. Some people actually deactivated and reactivated their Facebook account to get rid of him. For some that didn't work. I haven't talked to anybody who's seen Roy Castillo, but I'd be curious if you had him appear. His guy's name, girl's picture as his profile picture. It was just hackers, right? The weird thing is you couldn't delete the off to the Danau City. You couldn't block Roy because he actually wasn't in your friends list, but he somehow, it was definitely a bug. Something that somebody discovered. Pat on the back to Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington State. She's introduced a bill in the new Congress called the Internet Freedom Broadband Promotion and Consumer Protection Act of 2011. Don't they usually have an acronym? Let's see, IFBPACPA. Oh, the IBFCA. IBFCA Act. The IBFCA Act. Actually, it's a good bill, I think, because I don't know if you know, but the Federal Communications Commission has been trying to preserve net neutrality. This is a little controversial. You know, when you look what happened in Egypt this week where they cut off the internet and you go, well, maybe government intervention in the internet is not such a good idea. But I do think we need somebody to tell the internet service providers to hands off the internet because there's no competition. If there's competition, we wouldn't need to do it. But how many choices do you have? Not very many. In most cases, one or two. It's a duopoly. And they both, you know, I'm sure will soon be saying things like, well, you can't use Skype. We have our own phone service. Or, well, you can watch Netflix, but it's not going to look as good as the fine HBO we'll sell you for twice as much money. Things like that. So this net neutrality is an issue. Issue on wireless, too. FCC said, okay, we'll enforce it on landlines. Some question about whether they have the power to do so. Courts have been a little funny on that. We'll enforce it on landlines, but anything goes on the wireless because, you know, there's no bandwidth. And those poor wireless people, they're not making enough money. They really need some help or something. Oh, maybe they had something to do with all the lobbying Verizon and AT&T did. I don't know. Well, Maria Cantwell's is this act, this will say that the net neutrality provisions will apply to wireless as well, which they sure as heck ought to. Unless you think it's a good thing that Verizon requires you to watch TV on VCast instead of Netflix, that kind of stuff. So we'll keep an eye on that. Well, I know I know the end times have come because on Twitter, you know, the top Twitter, number one person on Twitter, what is Lady Gaga, 7 million followers on Twitter. Believe it or not, the president of the United States is only number 6 on Twitter. But that's not the end times. The end times is Kim Kardashian is about to beat him. More people follow Kim Kardashian on Twitter than the president. Now, I think we could come up with a strategy for the president. Maybe if he talked about his butt more, he'd get, you know, that might work. I'm sure that media experts are flocking to the White House to get his rankings up on the Twitter. I don't know which is worse, that in fact Kim Kardashian is beating him or that we care. It is just Twitter after all, right? Mobile phone market has really taken off. I don't need to tell you this. The mobile phone market has really taken off. Last quarter, 18% growth in cell phone shipments, the largest increase in 4 years. You'd think, you know, at some point, everybody's got one. But that's what's changing. Everybody had one a couple of years ago. And now people are buying new ones more often. How long have you had their current cell phone? See, there's different kinds of people. There's the kinds of people who are sitting in this room with me who have the latest Android iPhone kind of thing. And probably they upgrade every year or two. And then there's, I meet them all the time, people who have the same Nokia candy bar phone they got 8 years ago.
Well, it works just fine. It's a phone.
I think the increase, when you say this increase of 18% in shipments in 2010, this is in smartphones. This is people who are upgrading more than they had in the past. The biggest jump was Android phones. In fact, some say Android will outpace the iPhone sometime this year. There'll be more Android phones out there than iPhones. And more Android apps than iPhone apps. They're catching up very quickly. I think that's kind of interesting. It's a smartphone world. And that's, I talk about it a lot. So certainly your questions for smartphones would be welcome. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 8888 Ask Leo. That's 1-888-827-5536. 1-888-827-5536. You can call anywhere, toll free, anywhere in the U.S. And if you're calling from outside the U.S., Skype. Skype out will work for free. Did you see Mark Zuckerberg on Saturday Night Live last night? It's pretty funny. They had Jesse Eisenberg, the kid who played Zuckerberg in the movie The Social Network, is the guest host. So he's talking about, you know, being Mark Zuckerberg. And then Andy Samberg comes out dressed like Mark Zuckerberg and says, I'm Mark Zuckerberg. And they do a little thing, and it's cute, and it's funny. And then the real Mark Zuckerberg comes out, and you can tell he's the real one because he can't act. The other guys, you know, can act, but he's like wooden. And it's funny because they pretend Jesse pretends he's a little, you know, embarrassed. Awkward. And Andy Samberg's. That was good. I liked it. You can watch it on YouTube or Hulu. 8888 Ask Leo. Your phone calls next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. Luis Oliveira at the controls. Is Gina in today? Gina Savati on the phones. Jason King. King? The King is here? He's in studio? Awesome. The King answering the phones. You just say, Your Royal Highness, when you call in, and he'll deign to put you on the air. Susan in Agora Hills, California, our first call of the day. Hi, Susan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
I have become totally overwhelmed with the concept of redoing my media room, which it was not very high tech to begin with. And I thought all I'd have to do is decide between an LED and a plasma TV, and all of a sudden and I haven't even made that decision yet, and now I'm being faced with more than just that, but all kinds of new gadgets and boxes that I didn't interested. I was hoping that you could give me some direction with the LED versus plasma, and then, you know, whether I really need to spend $1,500 for a universal remote, wouldn't it be better to be putting it into new receivers and speakers and things like that?
So you obviously have an installer working with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody ever says to me, I hear I have to install and do $1,500 universal remote, unless they've got an installer breathing down their neck.
Right.
The installers like the universal remotes because one thing they don't want is a call from you saying, how do I watch Oprah? Or I can't, I know the Sopranos are on here somewhere. Where? So they give you this and it also, by the way, that's a lot of the value they add is they pre-program that remote. Let's start with the TV.
For what they, because I don't even know how to.
1500 is outrageous for a remote. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
No, don't do that. There's very good remotes that are, you know, the Logitech Harmony One is fantastic. It's 700. It's half that. But let's talk first about the TV. Okay. So the LED, by the way, when you say LED, they're actually LCDs, but they have LED backlights instead of the old fluorescent lights. So the Harmony One is $250, so even better. Scott Wilkinson's coming up in a little bit. He's going to have a lot to say about this. Yeah, and it's a very good, but anyway, I'll get to that. Let's start with the TV, because this is a question almost everybody asks, LCD versus plasma.
Okay.
And, you know, all other things being equal, plasma is a better picture, but it has some disadvantages. You generally need to darken the room because plasma is not as bright. More importantly, the glass in the plasma display will reflect any light. So plasma is for home theater, but you're building a media room. Maybe you don't mind that.
Okay.
LCDs are brighter. They look better in, if there's light, ambient light in the room. The LCDs are not as good for action, like fast car chases or football, but they're getting better. And a lot of the new LCDs have some interesting features. Are you looking at 3D?
I don't know that 3D is really there yet to support the different.
It's by the way, never going to be there. It's a gimmick. However, all the hot new TVs have 3D, so.
Okay.
You may get it anyway.
The other thing the installer is telling me is that even if I don't use it, it's better to get the one with it because all the other things about the picture are better.
Exactly. Exactly. Scott's been saying that now, and it's apparently true that as stupid as 3D is, and believe me, it's never going anywhere. The better TVs all have it.
Okay.
I you know, you're going to get it. You could put the glasses in a nice, you know, box somewhere. And you might use it. The one place where it's kind of cool is in sports. But I just read a great Roger Ebert linked to a great article by Walter Murch, the very well-known sound and film editor. Many, many, many times won an Oscar. Merch made a very strong case for why 3D will never work. It's having to do with the physiology of 3D. And I thought it was quite good. And I kind of frankly agree with him. But anyway, that doesn't matter because you're probably going to get it anyway. As for the remote control, there are lots of great programmable remote controls. The Logitech Harmony One is probably all you need on Amazon, $166. Is that right? Is that right? Is it possible? Wow. The installer is going to give you has a big else. It's like an iPad. Has a big LCD on it, you know, and you push the buttons and stuff, and that's nice. And he can really program it. It's a selling point. I call it the Ozzy Osbourne remote. Because on that show, he always says, Sharon, I can't forget the remote. So I don't think you need it, but installers always get you one of those.
Yeah. Okay.
Harmony One. Because the Harmony One, you can program it online. You plug it into your computer. You tell it what you've got, how it's set up. And it gives you buttons for watching your, I want to watch Showtime tonight. Press a button. It turns on exactly what needs to be turned on. Programs it. I'm leaving for vacation, and my wife said, "Before you leave, would you please give me an instruction manual on how to watch our TV?" And I started writing it out, and it was several pages. If you want to watch a DVD, no, you don't want that.
Yeah.
And that's why installers sell you these very expensive programmable remotes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think a Harmony One will do all of that and make it easy for you to do what you need to do. Depends how much you want to lean on this guy.
And what about in terms of installation, I don't know that I'm going to go with this guy then, because, you know, it doesn't sound like it's something he would even install. I mean, what's a reason?
You can do this all yourself. Here's the one thing you want a couple of things you want a person for, maybe, if you really, you want to do a great home theater. So a couple of things. One is calibrating the screen itself. Once you get the screen in, guy comes in with some hardware that will get the screen precisely calibrated. And then sound design, because every room is different. So you can buy a great 5.1 or 7.2 sound system, but the placement of the speakers and the equalization and all that varies depending on the sound. So, you know, high-end speakers and so forth. There's a speaker system that's so high-end, an engineer comes out from Germany to set it up for you. Yeah, he says, well, we have to fix this just right. But that's so, and I don't even know if your installer is, certified to do things like calibrate the TV or set up the audio.
Okay. And what would you, I mean, do you have any suggestions as far as models of TVs or models of receivers?
Why don't you hang on the line? Because Scott's going to be on in a second. You could ask the man himself. And he's also, by the way, as I said, going to be doing a whole show next week. Hang on the line, because I think Scott can give you some suggestions. He likes the Panasonic plasmas right now. They're very good. If you're going to go plasma, have you decided plasma or LCD? Did I sway you? I still haven't swayed you, hey?
No, I'm still I usually turn the light down in the room anyway to see the TV, but...
Right. I think you could over-agonize over this, Susan. If you get decent equipment, you're going to be blown away no matter what. So, I mean, these differences, some of them are slicing it pretty thin. The people who do these reviews, Scott, don't listen. Plug your ears. The people who do these reviews, the people who, you know, do this for a living, really are talking about how many angels dance on the head of a pin. It's a very, you know, there's a fine difference between some of these things. So you can overspend and go a little crazy for very little value. But hang on, Susan. Let's get Scott on. He can defend himself. Leo Lapoy, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Carbonite.com. It's backup done right. Try it today at Carbonite.com. Offer code Leo for 2 weeks free. Carbonite! Leo Laporte, the tech guy, talking with Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy. And I should say right off the top, Scott will be filling in for me next week. And I can't think of somebody better to do the show because we get so, I mean, half the questions now are home theater questions. It really is the topic.
It seems to be a very popular topic, and I'm so thrilled to be sitting in for you. Thank you so much for allowing me to do that.
Thank you for doing it. And everybody be gentle.
Yes, please.
Be gentle. So you heard before the break, we were talking to Susan in Agoura Hills. She's building a media room. I'm jealous. I'm envious.
First question
was plasma versus LCD, and you and I both agree plasma is the best choice if you can darken the room and you care about action on the screen, sports, that kind of thing.
Yep. I prefer the look of a plasma, generally speaking. In fact, I just finished a review. I haven't written it yet, but I finished the work on a Panasonic S2, a very inexpensive plasma that looks pretty darn good. I think.
What did you tell Lisa to get? Because she's very happy with that one.
I told her to get a Panasonic. She got the VT25.
That's
which
my
is,
business partner. She spent, that was about $3,000?
Something like that. But it was a 60-inch. It was a big,
beautiful.
It was a big one.
Beautiful.
And gorgeous.
Yeah.
Now, that is a 3D TV, and you made the point, and rightly so, that a 3D TV is generally going to give you a better 2D picture. It's going to be on their premium TVs, this 3D feature.
All of the premium TVs now will have 3D.
They all will. And, you know, even if you never use it, you're going to get a better 2D performance on such a TV. So Lisa got the VT25.
She got 3D. She's got an 8-year-old kid, and she got the Blu-ray, 3D Blu-ray player. And, you know, I'm sure he's thrilled. It's kind of gimmicky in my mind. Is there any reason one should consider, when should one consider an LCD? Where is an LCD better?
Well, certainly in a brightly lit environment, as you said, if it's going to be in a family room, where there are kids playing in the corner or, you know, grandma's sewing in her seat or whatever, and they need light, LCD is probably going to do better there.
Or you're watching daytime TV or,
exactly. Or you have a room, you're watching daytime TV, particularly in a room with, you know, lots of windows or.
Well, it's kind of depressing to darken the room for days of our lives. You don't want to really do that. You don't want to sit in there with a soap opera in a darkened room. That's just.
I suppose that's true. And a lot of people don't like sitting in a dark room. And I will say that that's a very common thing. I myself am happy to sit in a dark room because I have a plasma. And
so, Susan, do you mostly watch movies on your TV? Oh, she wandered off.
She wandered off.
Susan, I'm sorry.
There she is.
Do you mostly watch movies on your TV?
Movies and cable, HBO and that kind of
thing. HBO. So I think that's home theater stuff.
It really is home theater territory. And Susan, you said you often do darken your room when you're watching TV, right?
I'd say 75% of the time.
Will you save money on an LCD? Is it less expensive than a plasma? It used to be.
Actually, LCDs used to be more expensive.
Oh, at the big sizes.
At the big sizes particularly. And that gap has shrunk to almost nothing now. So
really, price is not an issue here. No.
Plasmas are a very good value. And, I hate to beat a dead horse here, but I prefer the look of a plasma TV. It doesn't have any of the inherent problems of an LCD. And LCD has tried to solve those problems with, say, motion interpolation. We've talked about that before, frame interpolation.
Now, Scott liked the Harmony One remote. This is the remote I said you should get, Susan, instead of the big Crestron
$1,500 remote. Holy smokes.
There's got to be some profit built into it for that installer. But the Logitech Harmony One list price is $250. They're telling me that on Amazon it's $145 after rebate.
Now, I will say this, the Harmony One is an IR remote, infrared. So if you have your equipment hidden in a cabinet, you're going to either need a repeater, some sort of infrared repeater system that gets the infrared signal to the components, or you need a remote that does what's called RF, or radio frequency.
So basically, and this is why installers sometimes will use those Crestrons and other big expensive remotes, is that they will hide all the gear in a closet or somewhere else, and that those use radio waves, Susan, so they can work around corners, whereas this Logitech requires line of sight to the gear.
Now Logitech does make other remotes that have RF capabilities in them, so you might want to check those out.
I'm sorry, Susan?
What if it's behind glass?
That's fine.
Not a problem.
Okay.
So if she has a, Susan, if you have a cabinet with the gear under the TV and glass, that's fine.
Okay, good. Yeah. Good.
And you were asking about brands. I would say Panasonic plasmas or Sony or Samsung LCDs. LED, an LED LCD,
absolutely.
An LED backlit TV is much better than a conventionally backlit TV. And if you're going for 3D, if you want 3D, I would get Samsung rather than Sony, because the Sony TVs suffer from what's called crosstalk or ghosting if you tilt your head even a little bit.
What other questions did you have, Susan, as long as we've got our guy here?
Sure. What about this? I've heard that either, I think it's plasma, that you have the burn-in or burn-out if I pause
right.
a lot.
Used to be a big problem. They've really fixed that.
They've really fixed that up quite a bit. It's really not the problem it used to be. You don't want to keep a static image on a plasma for days on end. That would not be
you
good.
You know where you get in trouble, Susan? And this is where I have to kind of beat this into my kids' heads when they're sitting there playing their Xbox. Do not leave that Xbox on with
right.
the game screen because you decided to wander off and have a pizza.
Right.
But that's really, you're not, if it's just you, you're not going to leave it on the same thing for very long. You know, sometimes you pause the DVD and it's sitting there, but most DVD players now and the screens themselves have burn-in protection. They'll start going into a low screen mode or a
screensaver mode.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And so there isn't that. I was looking at a 55 inch. I didn't think that, I thought there was a sizable difference in price between the plasma and the LED, but you don't think so.
No, I don't. LED LCDs might be somewhat more expensive than a comparably sized plasma because LED is a newer technology and so on. But when you go to these LED edge lit, which is what you'll mostly find these days, mm-hmm. I think the price differential is minimal, if at all.
I have plasma, Susan. I like plasma.
Okay, good.
I do too.
Probably go that way then. And as far as the receiver and you know, any other, I mean, obviously I need speakers and all that, but would you get the same brand? Well, two questions. What receiver for, you know, I don't need top of the line, but I don't want entry either. And what
sure.
Blu-ray?
Blu-rays, we've seen so little difference in the performance of different Blu-ray players that it almost doesn't matter. I like Panasonic's generally, and I'm not saying that because you should get the same brand as you have TV. If you get a
that
Panasonic,
that doesn't matter at all.
No, it doesn't matter okay. at all. But Panasonic Blu-ray players are generally very good performers, in particular as far as the load times are concerned. You know, how long it takes a disc to come up from the time you put it in the tray. And they're pretty inexpensive. So I would say in those two regards, Panasonic Blu-rays are good. Receivers, you know, again, just about any good receiver. I like Denon. I like Pioneer. I like Sony. Just about anything in the mid price range is gonna do you just fine. Look at Home Theater Mag or HomeTheater.com for reviews of receivers and also recommendations.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Susan. I think we just saved you about $8,000.
Thank you.
Take care, Susan. Yeah, I think this is very common, isn't it, Scott, that people will get upsold to more than they really need.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you wouldn't disagree with me when I said that a lot of times when we talk about stuff, whether it's home theater or cell phones or computers, because we're enthusiasts, we care about the subtle differences. Most
yes.
people, you're going to get a big screen TV. You're going to be so happy. You get
yes.
a Blu-ray player. You're going to be so happy. You
yes.
wouldn't notice these differences.
I agree with you entirely.
Yeah.
That's what we have to look at, you know, because that's all we have to differentiate one from another in
right.
many cases,
right.
in most cases.
Right. Scott will be here next week, so get your questions ready. And you can also catch him at the Ultimate AV Magazine, ultimateavmag.com, and Home Theater Magazine, hometheatermag.com. We'll talk to you later. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. Boy, that's fun to talk to Scott Wilkinson. He does a podcast on my podcast network. If you know what a podcast is, I hope you do. It's just you download audio from the internet, basically. You could put it on your iPod, but you could also listen on your computer. A lot of different places. It's audio and video. It's called Home Theater Geeks. In fact, that's why his Twitter is HT Geek Scott.
Because he's a home theater geek.
And this Monday, tomorrow, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern at live.twit.tv, he's going to talk to a special effects guy. Special effects war stories. How they do it. It'll be fascinating. That's tomorrow. And as I mentioned, and I'm very thrilled, Scott will be filling in for me next week. So that should be a lot of fun. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Paula, Los Angeles, thanks for hanging on, Paula. We did a lot of home theater there. Let's get on with it. Leo Laporte here. What can I do for you?
Well, we tried to watch a movie last night, and we got the Blu-ray started up. Everything started up. We got audio, but no video.
Well, heck, that's no good. Have you gotten video before?
Yes. The TV, all right, so, we have a Kuro monitor.
Oh, that's the best. That's what I have, too. Isn't it beautiful?
Well, if you got a picture on it, yeah.
It's very dark otherwise.
Yeah.
You're sure you were on the correct? Now, first of all, you connect the Blu-ray via an HDMI connector and cable?
Pioneer Blu-ray. Yeah. And so it automatically changes the receiver to Blu-ray. And okay, you get the audio, but no video. And the monitor says no input signal.
Yeah. So there's a couple possibilities. Do you use an HDMI cable?
Yes.
Could be the cable fell out or is loose. It sounds to me like the, quote, auto switching might not have switched either.
Okay.
So what I would do is I'd check the cable, make sure it's okay. Maybe unplug it, plug it in again to both the TV and the Blu-ray. And you can do that while the TV's on. That might give a little hint to the TV. Hey, there's something here, buddy. But the fact that it says no signal, that tells me either the cable's not working, you know, that the signal's not coming out of the Blu-ray player. And you know, I doubt very much that that's the Blu-ray player's fault, or that the TV, and this seems to me most likely, this auto switching might not have auto switched. This is the biggest problem now. In fact, this is the thing that confuses my wife when she wants to watch TV, is there are multiple inputs into the television. In the old days, you turn on the TV, the input is a rabbit ear or maybe a cable, and that's it. Then you got the cable box. Okay, now I got to get the cable box connected to the cable and the cable box going to the TV. But, you know, it got a little weird. You'd have to change it to channel 3 and leave it on channel 3. And then TVs got a little more sophisticated, and they started getting, on the back, you see them, a bunch of inputs. You got your component. You got your composite. You got your HDMI 1, 2, 3, and 4. You got your video, you know, the little yellow video. That's the composite. You got your, and so now when you watch TV, and this is the thing I haven't been able to really kind of express clearly, apparently, to my wife, you have multiple remotes, right? Because there's one for each thing. And then you turn on the TV with a TV remote, but then you have to select the right input. Now, what she's saying is the TV automagically says, oh, I see a Blu-ray player. And it's nice if it works. It's nice in theory. What I'd probably do is get that Kuro remote out. I could visualize it. And right at the top row, there's one, you know, input. There's an input array. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I think there's like 12 inputs on that thing. There's 7 HDMI inputs on that TV. And make sure it's set to the one you're plugged into. And this is what I had explained to Jennifer. I said, well, okay, 4 is the DVD player. 5 is the cable box. 6 is the Roku box. I didn't mention the fact that the Xbox 360 is 70. The Google TV is 3. The Apple TV is 1. I just left that out. A little too complex. You'd have to have a map to watch TV. I just said the 3. If you want to watch, and really, that's what this Harmony remote does. It's so great. Is you tell it what the setup is. Once it knows, that's the complicated part, but you can do it on the computer, so it's not so hard. And once it knows what the setup is, then you just push a button. And you push that button, and the button says, okay, I know how to get there. I got to go to input 4. I got to turn on the satellite box. I got to turn on the TV. I got to set this receiver to input 4. That's another complication if you've got an audio receiver that has to be set too. It's out of control. Bose has a very interesting system. They've tried to figure this out and make it automatic. And I think a lot of people are looking at that as a way, as a savior. I'm a geek, so I know how to do it. We're going to talk to Chris in just a little bit. He wants to talk about voice recognition on the cell phone. It's pretty amazing on Android. We'll talk about it in a sec. But first, I want to remind you that today could be one of those days that one of three things happens. Your computer crashes because a virus got on your hard drive, or maybe just crashed because it crashed, or you accidentally dropped your laptop. In an instant, all your pictures, your priceless files, your information could be lost forever. How do you feel? Not good. So before any of those happens to you, you got to remember three words: Carbonite, online, backup. Three reasons to get Carbonite today. It's easy. Anyone can get started at Carbonite.com. Just use my name, Leo. Carbonite is automatic. Your pictures and other files on your computer will be backed up anytime your computer is hooked up to the internet without slowing you down. I like that. And three, and this is something I should tell you about more, Carbonite gives you anytime, anywhere access to your backed up files. You don't have to wait for a disaster. You just log in on any computer to your Carbonite account. There's your data. It's a great way to share data with other computers. In fact, there's even an iPhone and a BlackBerry app, smartphone apps for that. So get Carbonite today before you need it, because, you know, frankly, afterwards it's too late. Unlimited backup, PC or Mac, just $55 a year at Carbonite.com, 15 cents a day. Start your 15-day free trial today at Carbonite.com. Offer code Leo, you'll get 2 free months if you decide to buy. You got to back it up to get it back, so do it right at Carbonite.com. Offer code Leo. Chris, Orange County, California. Hi, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, hi, Leo. Longtime listener and fan and watcher, because I'm watching you right now.
Well, I'm waving at you right now.
And first-time caller, however.
Well, it's about time.
I know, but it took a really important question in order to get me to call. So this
okay.
is it.
Yes.
We got my wife a Droid Incredible based mostly on your recommendation.
That always scares me when I hear that, because I feel like I'm about to be blamed for something.
Well, no, actually, we're quite happy.
Are you happy? It's a beautiful phone. I love the Incredible.
It's great. We're on Verizon, and we love Verizon. And, of course, it's my job to figure everything out and then
you're the tech guy
translate it to her. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So my question has to do with the speech recognition. She has sent a couple of text mails by voice, and she got it right the first time. I was so proud
of her. It's
pretty
cool. You press and hold the little magnifying glass button on there, and then you can talk to the phone.
Yeah, and say, it works.
It does work. I do it all the time. It's incredible.
It's like almost 100% accurate. So, but the problem is the voice recognition, the speech recognition on voice dial is ridiculous.
I would guess that the
And it doesn't. And not only does it not call the right number, but it doesn't verify it before it dials. So,
oh, that's embarrassing.
I mean, it's crazy. I try to call my son, Mark. I say, call Mark, and it calls the market.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering why it wouldn't be, you know, just as accurate as the text messaging.
I'm thinking that the voice control is probably Verizon.
Oh.
And not Google. This really irks me. And I haven't played with the Incredible, so I'm going to ask somebody in the chat room to check for me. But this really irks me is that the carriers, and this is one of the reasons why I do use an Android phone, but I use the Nexus S, which is a pure Google phone. It's made by Samsung. It's basically the same as one of the Samsung Galaxy S's, and it's T-Mobile. But neither T-Mobile nor Samsung put anything on here. It's just the plain Google. And by doing that, you kind of know that all the apps are going to be kind of work. And I would presume the voice control, I should look. Is Google on this? I don't know if it would work better or not. Let me see voice dialer. So when you launch your voice, is it voice dialer that you launch?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Call Jennifer Laporte. Let me just see what happens. Nothing.
What's that?
I'm just calling my wife. Call Jennifer Laporte. Hey, phone, I'm talking to you. Ah, you're right. It stinks. You know, it may not be. You know, I'll tell you, I know why it is. Because when you do the voice dictation, it's actually going out to the Google server. This is why it is. I just realized. It's actually going out and using the Google server, the Google computers. That's why it takes a little while. You have to be online to use it. The voice control is using the phone's processor. It's just using the internal. And they need to do it that way. Otherwise, if you weren't online, you couldn't voice dial.
Oh, yeah.
That's why. It's different technologies, and you're right. It's not as good because the phone is not as powerful as the Google Voice servers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, talking about everything with a chip in it. Love to do that, and I'm glad you're here. If you want to ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion, recommend something, you know, something you just bought, an iPhone app or an Android app, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Outside the U.S., Skype out's great. We have viewers all over the world, listeners all over the world. Thanks to that thing called the internet. Speaking of all over the world, Oliver Breidenbach is with us right now. Oliver is the CEO and founder of one of the most interesting companies out there today, Boinks. I love the name, too. BOINX.com. Oliver, great to have you. I've known about Boinks for a long time. We've had Boinks people visit before.
That's great.
And yeah. Boinks TV is a kind of... your premier product that allows people to do what I do, to broadcast using their computer, basically.
Yeah, basically from the living room.
That's pretty neat. How many cameras can you put in there?
Basically, it's limited by the number of connectors you have on your Mac, because you have to...
So I could have one USB camera, one FireWire camera. You can mix and match.
Yes,
that way?
Oh, and if cool. You have like a Mac Pro, you can throw in a couple of FireWire cards or, you know, SDI cards or whatever.
And it lets you switch. You can do green screen. You can do lower thirds. All the things that I do here in the studio.
Yeah, yeah. At the fraction of the price that you...
I spent a lot of money for me. $10,000 for the NewTek video device. I use the TriCaster broadcast. $10,000. Mm-hmm. And the one we're going to go to, the XD850, is $25,000.
Yeah, you can afford it.
Well, let me tell you something. I come from a broadcast background where that kind of stuff is a truck that costs millions of dollars. So it's amazing. How much is Boinks TV?
It's $499.
It's amazing. Yeah. $500, but there is a trial online. You could try it.
Yeah, it's a trial online. And also we just released a home version, which is only $49.
You also do, and I want to plug this, especially for people with kids. Something called iStop Motion. And the new version just came out. This is, schools use this. Parents use it. A lot of kids get into, everybody's seen stop motion, you know. And kids really get into this because they have little toys. You know, they have their Lego toys or their Brio trains or whatever it is. And they can make amazing videos with stop motion. Frankly, I think a lot of kids do it because kids have the patience. I don't have the patience to sit there and move one frame at a time. But this lets you do it. It's really neat.
Yeah, and also it's not only the kids. I mean, the kids get to play with the same tool that was recently used to do Paul Simon's new music.
Really?
Yeah.
And you've added a feature that I'd only seen in still cameras and maybe some very high-end movies. They actually used it in The Social Network called Tilt Shift, which allows people to kind of put one thing in focus and the rest out of focus, and it makes it look like a toy. It's kind of cool.
Really yeah. It's great if you point a camera out of your window and film all the little people.
BOINX.com. Well, it's nice to see you. Are you in town for Mac World Expo? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's just ended. Or I guess it's like today is the last. No, last no, night was last night. Yeah. In San Francisco. You do a lot of Mac stuff. You have your first iPad app just came out.
Yes.
What's that called?
It's called PhotoBox, and it's for photographers to be able to show their images and look at the curves. And
you know, I'm doing on this Mac Mania cruise that I do. I do these every year where we go and we talk about Mac stuff. I'm always talking about Mac. In fact, I do this lecture, 60 great apps for the iPhone in 60 minutes. It's a minute an app, although I have 90 apps.
And it's also a buck an app, right?
Well, they're cheap, right? But, you know, it's increasingly, every year, it's more and more photo apps. This is turning out to be an amazing photography tool. It just blows my mind what people are doing with an iPhone. And it's got a pretty decent camera in it. And then all of the cool apps allow you to do all sorts of stuff. It's really neat.
Yeah, yeah. We also have one in that area called You Gotta See This, which is...
I use that.
Yeah, you use that.
It's one of my 60 picks, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. Hard to describe, but basically you go somewhere and that, I mean, the name of the program kind of says it all. You go somewhere, you gotta see this. And it lets you do kind of a collage panorama by just kind of moving the phone slowly around of where you are. And then they have all sorts of really neat looking ways of displaying it and tweeting it and Facebooking it. And, you know, I think I drove everybody crazy for a while because I was using it all the time. How much is You Gotta See This?
I think $199 right now.
I love it that these apps are so cheap.
Yes.
Well, Albert, nice to meet you. Is all your stuff Mac only?
The Mac apps are Mac only, the iPhone apps and the iPad apps.
But all yeah. Apple stuff.
Yeah, all Apple stuff.
None of that Microsoft stuff.
No. None of that.
There's a reason for this, by the way. I was asking him off the air how he got started in this business. How old were you when you got your first computer?
7.
And it was?
An Apple One.
Yeah. Apple One.
Yes.
One of just a few hundred.
Yes. About 200 were ever made.
Wow. How did you get a hold of an Apple One at the age of 7?
My father actually bought them from Steve Jobs and...
Oh, that's really neat. Yeah. Well, Oliver, very nice to meet you. Thanks for stopping by today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
BOINX.com. If they have free trials of all their stuff, right? Almost all the stuff. So yes. You can go there and see. If you only download one thing, play with iStop Motion 2. It is so cool. It is so cool. And you could actually probably go to, I would think, YouTube and search for iStop Motion. I think there's a lot of people making really amazing stuff with it. Back to the phones we go. Ron on the line from San Gabriel, California, listening on the great KFI. Hi, Ron. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, I'd like to get some tips on how to improve my online software sales.
What are you selling?
Well, I'm selling bait stamping software. It's specialized for law firms, attorneys, paralegals, and anybody that has legal departments.
It stamps what? The documents?
Yeah, it's bait stamping is a common phrase in law firms. It's essentially just putting or applying sequential numbers to documents so that you can have some kind of document control.
Interesting. So, what's the name of your program?
It's called Bates Blaster.
B-A-T-E-S?
Yeah, B-A-T-E-S. Bates Blaster.
Not dates, Bates Blaster.
Yeah.
All right. I see it right now. Electronic bait. Oh, not date. I thought you said date stamping. It's bait, B-A-T-E stamping.
Oh, yeah. Bates, B-A-T-E-S.
I never even heard of that. So obviously all the lawyers listening know what we're talking about, but nobody else does. So it takes
pretty much.
Yeah. Adobe PDF documents. So you've got a website and you want to know how to get the word out.
Yeah, pretty much. I can tell you what I've done so far.
Sure.
Well, you're looking at the web page.
That's always good. If you don't have a web page, you don't exist nowadays.
Yeah, pretty much. The second is I'm on Google AdWords. I have my software submitted to hundreds of shareware sites.
That's a good idea, too.
Yeah. I've sent out email campaigns to paralegals and lawyers, so I have a service that does that.
Great idea.
I have a cheesy press release.
Now, I just did a Google search. Presumably, somebody who wants to do bait stamping is going to Google the words bait stamping, right? That's the phrase they would use?
Correct. Yeah, either bait stamping, bait numbering software,
okay,
et cetera.
How do you show up? And this is the key, as far as I'm concerned. How do you show up when people... type those phrases in? You got to look at your site and see, does it show up on the first page? If it doesn't, in fact, it really should show up on the first five.
Well, it's showing up on a few key phrases on page 2. So it's,
yeah, see, that's too late.
Up in the ranks.
Because the competitors are on page 1.
Yeah.
So one of the ways to do this, I noticed, for instance, here's a review, how to Bates stamp on pdfforlawyers.com. Get them to link to you.
Okay.
But look at these guys at the top, pdfbates.com. Look at these guys at the top, obviously not competitors, but look at the guys who are writing about it on the top and get them to link to you. That'll help a lot. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So you watch for him. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm training my studio manager, John. He's hiding behind me on how to use the equipment here.
It's just simple. You just press this button, John. It couldn't be easier. Radio, there's nothing to it.
Nothing to it. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. But somebody asked about Macworld Expo. But before I want to talk about that. Before, I want to talk a little bit more about Bates numbering. I never heard of that. Bait stamping. But what I'm about to say applies to anybody who has something they want to promote on the internet. Whether it's your blog, your pictures, your software, your group, your club, whatever. In some ways, it's gotten simple. Google. It's got to show up in Google. It's got to show up high in Google for the terms that people commonly use to find you. If it doesn't, then the other guys are going to be the ones people go to. And you could do all the things he did, which is great, which is, speak to groups, participate. I think one of the things that people sometimes forget is it's not just about marketing. It's about participating. So get out there, be a part of the internet community. Go to websites where, lawyers hang out, is there a website about Bates numbering? There probably is. Talk there, participate there. Get your product and name out by being an active member of the internet community. And then in most simplistic terms, the way you get links on Google is by having high quality sites link to you. So look for other sites that will put a link in. Don't fall for the SEO trick. There's people out there, they call themselves search engine optimization experts. And sometimes what they'll do, and this is very risky, is they'll create pages of links. Just links. They call them link farms. Idea being Google will see it. It'll boost your ranking, and it might temporarily, but as soon as Google figures out that that's what's going on, and they're very quick to do so, they will not only block the link farms, but they can punish you by blocking you. So you want to have high-quality incoming links based on real interest. You want to have high-quality content. You want to update that content regularly. There's some little things you can do. For instance, you probably have noticed this. Google pays extra attention to the name of the page. So there's in HTML, there's a little title tag, bracket, title, bracket. That title is fairly important, at least according to the last, information I've seen about Google. Google's always changing. But the last time they, when they filed for the patent, they said, we pay close attention to that. So your name obviously should be in there, your product name, but also maybe some of the terms you want people to search for you and find you on. That'll help. If your site is all flash, if Google can't search into the content of your site, that's not good. Google needs to know what your site's about for it to show up in the Google search index. Let's see. 8888 Ask Leo. I'll save the Macworld Expo conversation for a little bit. I'll give you a little quick review of Macworld Expo. But first, Mark in Los Angeles, you're next. Leo Laporte. Wait, oh, that was you, Mark. I'm sorry. Did that help a little bit?
Oh, Leo?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Did that help a little bit?
No, this is
another person. Another person wants some help promoting his website.
I know it's a promotion show today.
Yeah, it's all right.
Leo, I appreciate your show. I am a huge fan, as everybody else is, obviously, that listens to this show. But I have an application that wouldn't really be out if it wasn't for you. So I'm really thankful for that as well. And I'm trying to get it. The app store is so convoluted. It unless you're searching for the specific title of it, it doesn't come up. So I'm wondering what there is to get it.
I know. In fact, sometimes even if you do search for the title, I was looking for a program. A friend Yuri Engstrom was telling me about called Marco. It's a really cool app program that you have on your iPhone. And when you want to tell somebody where you are and find out where they are, you press a button on Marco and it texts them saying, Leo just said, where are you? And here's where he is. And then they respond and then you get a polo back. Get it, Marco? Polo. Cool. So I searched for Marco on the App Store. Go ahead and do it. You don't even find that app. You find three other apps. It's very frustrating. So you're exactly right. Apple has done a very bad, in my opinion, very, very bad job of making. Now, remember, there's over 300,000 apps.
Yeah.
So it's tough. But I think that the review system on the App Store is not very good. I think that finding stuff is not very good. And browsing, you basically you browse a shallow fraction of the apps that Apple exposes, you know, editorially.
Yeah, exactly. It's you go into the kids section in games, and there's only 10 or 20 apps there.
Whereas there are probably hundreds, maybe thousands.
Yeah, that's right.
So how do you get to be one of the – well, you don't. You can't influence Apple's editorial choices. The guys – now, I happen to know the guys who do this, but they're very shady private characters. They don't want –
right.
I mean, that's the last thing they want is to be flooded with emails from developers saying, pick me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the best way to do it, you have a web page?
Yes, we do. It's not very good right now, but it's, yes.
Well, make it better because really, actually, you know what? I should ask. We got a guy who sells iPhone apps right here. Make your web page and using the web to promote yourself and your web page. And your app, ultimately, is probably the only thing you have control of. Would you agree, Oliver?
Yeah. Basically,
Oliver is Boinx Software, if you just tuned in, BOINX.com. And you have an iPhone app and an iPad app?
Yes.
How do you promote it?
Basically, the traditional stuff, you know, press releases.
Normal marketing, through Apple, in other words.
Not through Apple. You can't bank on that. I mean, they choose you whenever they like, and sometimes you get lucky, and then... you celebrate, but there's nothing you can do actually to be picked.
That's my best
for making a very good, very nice, cool app. I mean, that's the basics, you know.
Right.
Do you think it helps to be a business? Because I'm as an individual up there, and it looks like all the top apps are businesses.
You know, there are individual produced apps up there, and in fact, that is one way to score. If you look at the App Store, the Mac App Store, which is the new way you get software on the Mac. There are a lot of smaller individual companies up there, but what happens is the Electronic Arts of the world start to push these guys out. They put out so many apps, they're high quality, and so Apple starts to... What is your product?
It's called Playing with Dolphins, and I'd like to tell you, if I can, quickly how I... You know, I bought Apple stock with your recommendations. You know, not your recommendation, but...
No, I never say to buy Apple stock, please.
20 years ago or 10.
I don't want to be responsible it tanks.
I made $20,000. I bought a Red camera, went down to the...
Whoa!
I didn't shoot it myself, but shot a movie.
Now, by the way, I just searched for Playing with Dolphins, and it's the first thing that came up. I guess that's one thing, is have a name that's unique.
Came up in iTunes?
Yep.
Oh, well, if you get the exact name right, but who's...
Yeah. Well, that's the key. Come on radio shows and say, Playing with Dolphins, Playing with Dolphins, Playing with...
All right. Well, yeah.
So this is 4K footage, very high quality footage of real dolphins. And then you tap the screen, they come to you, you hear them talk, you play with them. What a neat idea.
Well, I'm glad you think so. It's selling okay, but I assumed it would do a little better than this because there's other dolphin apps that are not very good on there that are above it.
Yeah, but look at all the 5-star ratings.
Well, most of those are me and my friends.
Oh.
You know,
I didn't hear that. Don't tell Apple that. Hey, well, you plug it on the radio. That's a good start. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Carbonite.com. It's backup done right. You got to back it up to get it back. So go to Carbonite.com and try it free right now. Use the offer code Leo. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. With me, Chris Marquardt, the photo guy. He joins us most weeks to talk about digital photography. You have a digital photography app as well on the App Store.
Oh, yeah. Let me say Pocket Crisp. I think I have to repeat it like five times.
You know, I was talking with Oliver, and it's really, the way Apple does this, the way Apple sets it up, you have to guess which keywords are going to do well at first, maybe do a search first to see. And I'll tell you, both of you are in photography. That is a crowded category.
Well, it is. But we are both in our niche. It's not like the usual photography app where you just where you get a filter to put on pictures. Mine is about teaching photography. The Boeing's app is about doing the panoramics, and it's a very different field there. So I think we both have a bit of visibility in our own fields there.
I wonder, Oliver, if you would use that name. What was it? You got to see this. If you would have used that name now knowing what you know.
Why not?
Because somebody's got to search for "you've got to see this."
Do it on Google. I mean,
So a unique name, yes. Especially if it's a Googleable unique name, that would be good.
Yeah.
So if you if I search for Pocket Chris, that's the only one, right?
Yes, but I also added photography. So the full name is like Pocket Chris Advanced Photography. So you will always find it when you search for photography as well.
But you are also the number one Google search for Pocket Chris. And this is smart. You created a website called pocketchris.com.
Absolutely. You have to have that.
Not merely a website, but a website with the name of the app.
That helps a lot.
I bet it does.
It's very basic SEO.
Yeah. Well, basic sometimes is the best way to go. It works. Oh, yeah. So let's talk about photography, because you know what I found out? I'm going to Antarctica. Mm-hmm. In a couple of weeks, I'll be in Antarctica with my Canon 5D Mark II, the most expensive camera I could imagine. With a plethora of lenses. And then I'm reading Michael Reichman's Luminous Landscape blog, in which he and four or five other photographers went to Antarctica in the summer. This is summertime in Antarctica with their 5D Mark IIs, and four out of the five died.
Okay, well, I remember the coverage of that trip, and I think they all had the battery grip on the camera. And I think that's what I read from the reports is that that humidity water snuck in between the battery grip and the camera, which shouldn't happen, which did happen.
There were some 1Ds that didn't die. That's, of course, much more expensive camera. But
oh, yeah, and Nikon did much, much better.
And the Nikons were much more.
Yeah, they were much more.
But I'm worried now. I mean, what do I do? Should I have a special super-duper camera for this trip?
Do you have the battery grip?
No.
No, I own the 5D Mark II. Before I took it to the Everest trek last year, I actually took it out in the rain without protection and tested it. I tested it. I had it in the rain for an hour, and it just did its job. So I knew nothing would happen.
And you didn't have problems. I mean, I can't imagine Antarctica will be any colder than base camp was.
No, it's going to be all right. You're going to be just fine. Have an extra battery with you. Make sure you have like a battery inside your jacket. So
now here's a question. Is condensation an issue? You don't want to keep the camera in the jacket warm and then take it out, right?
No. You want to keep the camera at the temperature where you shoot. Right. And the problem happens when you go inside with a cold camera, because the camera is cold, and then the warm water that has more humidity, it will condensate on the camera.
The good news is Antarctica is like bone dry.
Yeah, so you shouldn't really have an issue. And even if there's a bit of condensation on the camera, so what? It's not going to hurt the camera, especially not a 5D.
Yeah, no, I just don't want it to die.
No, it won't die.
Okay. No battery grip for me.
Unless you drop it off the ship, okay?
Yeah, that could be bad. Because I can't wait to get back some pictures. And I'm going to take all your snow picture advice to heart.
I'm so looking forward to your pictures. Absolutely.
So what did you want to talk about this week? Now that you've helped me, now that you've helped me, what can we do for you?
I want to talk a bit about aspect ratio, because people nowadays, they have their cameras and they just get the pictures they get. Like a DSLR today is going to have a 3:2 aspect ratio.
You know, I'm glad you're bringing this, because I just bought for the trip a Panasonic Lumix LX5, which has an aspect ratio switch. You can shoot wide 16:9. You can shoot square 1:1, or you can shoot the standard 3:2, and they even have a 4:3. So there's four different aspect ratios on that camera.
And that is a bit confusing, especially, and I bet 90% of the users will never take that out of its default, which is 3:2, I think.
I don't know what the default is. You switch it, so it's whatever you left it on.
So at the TV nowadays is more 16:9. If you go into analog photography, especially like medium format photography, you end up with a square aspect ratio, 1:1.
I figured if I'm doing a landscape, I'll do the wide aspect, right?
And there are some, different aspect ratios lead to different style of composition. If you, for example, use a wider format, for panoramics or mm-hmm. panorama type landscape shots, that mm-hmm. really is a good format. But this kind of picture also ends up being a bit more dynamic usually. When the format gets closer to the square, then that tends to produce more static pictures. So if you have something that is very calm, very static, something that doesn't move, try a square format. And even if you only crop it afterwards, it's going to be just fine. But I tend to do these things in camera if the camera allows it. I have an LX3, which is the older model.
Right.
And that also allows that. And the 1:1, the square aspect ratio is actually very good for things that...
Like an iceberg sitting there. An iceberg sitting there. That'd be a good example. That'd be a good square picture.
And you've got to play with placement of your subject as well. Like a 2:3 aspect ratio, that leads itself a lot to the rule of thirds kind of composition. With a square aspect ratio, not so much.
Center things. Do you center
it? It's more centered. Actually tends to be more centered. And I find myself doing that inadvertently, not really thinking about where I want to place things. Just I go by my guts. And that's what happens a lot when I shoot in a square format.
The truth is most people don't have these silly switches, but also, and somebody in the chat room said this, I don't care about that because I always crop my picture anyway.
Well,
so
do you do that, Leo?
Yeah. What I do is get back in Lightroom, look at the picture, and I frequently,
Do you do unusual crops? That's the question.
Do you just
leave the default aspect ratio in there?
No. Sometimes there's a little lock, a padlock that says keep the aspect ratio, which means don't, when you resize it, keep it the same, 4:3 or 3:2, I should say. Or you can unlock it. And sometimes I'll have to unlock it because I want. But when I'm cropping, so what you're saying is pay attention to the content. You might want to use
the content and the crop can really go hand in hand. And this little padlock thing is usually the first one I click open.
Oh, so you do? You don't like to do it with a standard aspect ratio?
Well, it really depends. But sometimes it really, a picture really leads itself to a very unusual crop. And I've had crops that are very thin in a horizontal fashion or very vertical. And try putting several of those like very vertical crops together on one page in a photo book, for example. Mm. You'll be surprised how those pictures can all of a sudden really complement each other.
There's a great iPhone app called Diptych
that
lets you do
that.
And it's really fun. So you take three or four pictures and then you arrange them in this kind of photo book style for one single picture.
And that kind of forces you into cropping pictures. If you want to do like three verticals next to each other in a square format together, Diptych really leads itself to that.
So you
can learn to crop your own pictures.
I'm bringing all this family fancy camera gear, and you know what? I bet my best pictures are on the iPhone with all this software that you can do all these neat things with.
You know, my piece of advice, take the 24-105 lens, leave the others at home, maybe take a 50mm. Don't take too much stuff with you.
You won't be
switching lenses that much.
Chris Marquardt is at chrismarquardt.com. He's the host of the Tips from the Top Floor podcast. And go to discoverthetopfloor.com because he's got some great workshops coming up. Chris, we'll see you next time. Thanks.
See you soon.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. You know, it's fun. When I first started doing technology talk radio, which was 20 years ago, was just computers. That's all you talked about. You talked about Windows 3.0, DOS 3.3, maybe Macintosh, and that was it. And now, when you're doing a it's not even a computer show, right? It's a technology show, and we get to talk about everything. Cars, cameras, TVs. I love it. It's much more fun. And you know, I'm a big fan of photography. I love, I'm a camera buff. So it's always fun to talk with Chris. I do want to remind you, we didn't get a chance to say, we do have an assignment, and Chris will come back and review some of these pictures in a couple of weeks. We try to give you a week to do it. Here's what you do. You have to be on Flickr to participate. No charge to join Flickr. In fact, if you have a Yahoo account, you're already a Flickrer. Go to FLICKR.com and find the Tech Guy group. It's in the, just search for Tech Guy. You'll find it pretty quickly. Our current assignment is Liquid. So that's it. That's all you have to do is take a picture that illustrates the concept of liquid. It could be a liquid. It could be, I don't even want to say anything. You got to tag it with the word liquid. We want you to take fresh pictures. So make sure that all the rules are on there on the Tech Guy group. Orbit Gals put them all up there. Make sure they're new. She also does some mini assignments too, which is fun. And then once a week, you can submit another picture with the tag liquid into the pool, and Chris will pick three to review sometime in the next few weeks. I like it. I'm going to have a chance, I think, to participate in this one. There should be some liquid on the cruise, I would think. Jason in Las Flores, California. Hi, Jason. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate your time. I've got a question for you. I have a Dell workstation. It's a desktop. And this has happened twice, and that's why I'm calling you. When I plug a flash drive into one of the USB ports, it causes the system to crash. Yeah, I get to death.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why it's happening. It's happened with two different flash drives. When I plug it into my laptop, it's fine. But only on the desktop does this happen.
And when you use anything else USB on those ports, does anything happen?
They work.
They work fine.
Absolutely.
So it's just those two flash drives, nothing else.
That is correct.
I'll give you a couple of possibilities. It is possible, in fact, it's not uncommon, for bad guys to use flash drives to infect your computer. That's how the Stuxnet virus that was recently launched against Iran's nuclear facility spread. It's interesting. Stuxnet, which we're pretty sure at this point was developed either by U.S. or Israeli intelligence, Stuxnet leaked out and infected a lot of computers. So could be that.
Well,
could be a virus or something that's on there that's auto-running. I do wonder, go ahead. You say what you want to say.
That one of the drives, it was brand new. It had never even been used until I plugged it in this morning before I called you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this is fresh out of the package.
Good. Well, we've just eliminated the malware.
Okay.
It crashed the first time you plugged it in.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay, well, there is also, now, are these, there is a kind of USB drive that has an auto run on it that automatically runs and launches a CD. Are these those kinds of drives, or are they just regular blank drives?
No, this does have a program on it.
Okay.
The one that created, now the other one that I have did not have, I had wiped it clean, I had formatted.
Can you look at, I was going to say, you can look at that flash drive from another computer and it looks okay?
Yes.
And it boots, and those drives are usable on other computers. So one of them is a U3 drive. You know what the U3 is, the thing where it looks like it's booting a CD in addition to the drive, and that's the auto run stuff.
Right.
Yes. Because U3, I hate U3. This is what I'm trying to figure out. Is something's crashing it, obviously.
Right.
The possibilities are the virus. We eliminated that. The software on the flash drive, like the U3 software, that does not go away with a format, by the way.
Oh, okay.
And the third thing it could be is that your USB drivers are clobbered. Now, since other stuff works on your computer, have you tried other flash drives on that computer? And they work fine.
Yes.
Okay, I'm thinking it's the U3 software.
Okay. How do I wipe that out or get rid of it?
U3 is a huge security risk, and I do not recommend it.
Okay.
You can remove U3, but only with a U3 removal tool, which the U3 Association offers. SanDisk also offers it. In fact, if you Google U3 launchpad removal tool, you'll be sent to a SanDisk site, and there's software you can download and run. It's the only way to take it off.
Huh.
Incredibly frustrating.
Saying that it's probably best not to do that.
No, I would get rid of it.
You would? Okay.
Absolutely. I don't think U3 is a security flaw because, formatting the drive doesn't get rid of it. So a bad guy can use your flash drive to spread malware because it launches software when you put it in.
Got it.
And, you know, it used to be if you held the shift key down, it would turn off auto run. It doesn't turn off U3. So you really need to, it's bad. So the first thing I would do is get those two drives to another computer, launch the U3 removal tool, and remove that hidden partition that the U3.
I will do that.
See if that continues. You can also go to u3.com/uninstall.
Okay.
And see if that fixes it. I'm thinking that's it, that the U3 software is crashing it. Because your computer's okay with other USB drives, so it couldn't be the driver on the computer. It was a fresh out-of-the-box flash drive, so it can't be malware. It's absolutely U3, which you should remove anyway. It's not a good idea. It's actually a fairly dangerous technology and unnecessary, and I wish they wouldn't put it on stuff. Anytime anything that you plug into the computer automatically runs software, bad. Bad idea. You should be in control of that because that's how bad guys get on your system. As long as we're talking about that, can I mention my friends at Nod32, the best little antivirus you ever heard of? Actually, Forbes magazine, Forbes.com, called it the best little antivirus no one's heard of. But I think if you listen to this show, you must have heard me talk about ESET's Nod32 for Windows and now for Mac. Cybersecurity for the Mac from these great folks at ESET. Same low resource usage. And I think that's important. You don't want to slow your system down. Same advanced heuristics engine. That's important on the Mac. There are not a lot of viruses out there on the Mac. But don't think that makes you safe on the Mac, especially if you're in a business. There's a kind of attack called spear phishing where viruses are crafted. This is what, by the way, the Stuxnet worm was. It was crafted to attack a specific party. If somebody is, for instance, interested in your business's financial records, they could send you an email targeted at your business with software targeted specifically for you. That's where most of the Mac attacks are coming these days. Cybersecurity for the Mac from ESET stops it cold with their advanced heuristics. They also understand that education is really the best thing to do to prevent infection, and they have a great educational component built in as part of every copy of ESET Cybersecurity for the Mac. Take a look at it. Absolutely free. Run it for 30 days. Go to ESET.com/Mac or call 866-935-ESET. If you use Windows or Mac, you need ESET security. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Rick in San Diego, California. You're next. Hi, Rick.
Hey, this is a great show. I love photography and having one guy in the... Fantastic.
Thank you. You're very kind. I like the variety.
Yeah, like you said, it used to be about computers, and now it's about you deal with in your
about everything. It's about life now. You know, we were talking about Egypt yesterday.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hey, I'm so glad ESET's for Mac now. I became a Mac user primarily a few years ago for a job, and I love it. And you don't have to worry too much, but I'm glad ESET's got a Mac version out. I recommend it to all my PC clients. So
good. Yeah, it's a great product. If anybody's going to make an antivirus for the Mac that I would trust, it's ESET.
Absolutely, I agree.
Yep.
Hey, we were talking about promoting apps and stuff. I just released my first app. It's a photography app, funny enough. And, what do you think about these review sites?
The review sites show up on Google, so it certainly doesn't hurt, and I certainly would encourage it. But the best thing to do is call the radio and tell the guy on the radio the name of your app. What's the name of your app?
I would love to. It's called Celebritize, And I currently have 8 editions out. And it lets
I've seen it. It's cool. I love it. Celebritize yourself. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. We're here to talk about computers and the internet and cell phones and camcorders, MP3 players, all that stuff. Phone number 8888 Ask Leo. 8888 Ask Leo. If you'd like to call in and ask a question or make a suggestion, I'd love to hear from you. Actually, let's get right back to the phones. Bob's on the line from Apple Valley, California. Hey, Bob, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo.
Hey.
Question. I plan to buy a laptop computer, and I'm looking for something that's very bulletproof.
Hmm. Panasonic makes a computer. When you say bulletproof, you don't mean actual bullets.
No. I want something that's rugged and reliable.
Well, okay. There's two different things. There's rugged, which is a physical ruggedness, and those Panasonic Toughbooks are physically very rugged. But they're running Windows, so reliable is another matter.
Okay.
They're as reliable as you can get. Let's put it that way.
Because I have about 1,000 Kodachrome transparencies I want to scan into it.
Oh, neat. And what are you going to do that out in the desert? I mean, why do you need a rugged computer?
Well, I have a desktop that's crashed on me twice. And and apparently the crash wasn't a physical crash. It was an electronic.
Yeah. When you say rugged, so when I hear rugged, I think of, you know, these Toughbooks are used by police officers in the field. They're used by the military. That's one kind of ruggedness. That means you can drop it. But that's a physical ruggedness. You're talking about a reliable, you want something that's not going to crash.
Very reliable, yes.
Yes.
And my desktop has so many devices and internet connections on it. I just want to have something that's clean to use to move all of these transparencies into.
And then you're going to edit the transparencies, or?
No. I just they're Kodachrome. They were shot 50 years ago, and they're just as good now as they were 50 years ago. But I want to share them with friends.
Sure. And are you going to get a scanner? Are you going to do the scanning yourself?
Yes, I have a couple of scanners, but it takes a long time to scan a 35-millimeter transparency.
I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you. I went to a service bureau and had it done for about, I think it was 70 cents a slide.
Yes, that's about what they charge. But
yeah.
Actually,
and they did a great job. They color-corrected. They cleaned it before they scanned it. They came back. They looked great. We had family slides going back to my childhood. And beyond, and before, actually. And, yeah, it was pricey. I think I spent $500 or $600, but I'm so glad I did it. I was really, really glad we did it.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, I mean, how much is your time worth? Because as you pointed out, how many slides do you have?
Nearly 1,000.
Yeah. Well, if you got a lot of free time, are you retired?
Yes, I am retired.
So it's a good project.
Yes, and I've been postponing buying a laptop for a long time now, but I decided I would like to have one because I move around a lot. By moving, I mean I'm traveling quite a bit.
I'll be honest with you, this would be a great application for a 15-inch MacBook Pro. They have great software, Aperture, for $80. It's a very good photo kind of light table software that lets you fix and clean and stuff like that. And there's even plugins that are specifically for cleaning up any dust or anything that might still be on the slide, although Aperture do a very good job of it.
Okay.
I think that's, and I'll tell you what, if you have a MacBook with Aperture on it, that's going to be as robust as you're going to get.
Aperture, is that software?
Yeah, it's Apple software. So now what Apple's done, it's kind of intriguing, and I'm sure everybody, including Microsoft, is watching with great interest. When you get your laptop up in the Apple menu, there's an App Store button, and you select it. And Apple's now selling applications the same way they did it on the iPhone and the iPad, and they're in this dedicated store. And, you know, I have to say, as much as I fear the future that's, all App Store-based, it's sure a lot easier for end users. And one of the come-ons, they have a $300 program, or $200 program they're selling for $80 called Aperture on the App Store, and it's just exactly what you want.
Okay. Well, I'll look at that. And the other question is, I have a 67-inch rear projector Samsung TV I've had for 3 years now. I couldn't be more happy with it, but I don't see any more rear projector TVs in the stores.
No, you can still get them, but there's only one company making them still, and Mitsubishi, and they're really, most people buy and want what's called a direct view display, plasma or LCD. And so there's just not much of a market for the rear projections anymore. Front projection's still out there because you can get such big display. You know, you can go 100 inches or more.
Right.
But rear projection, it's too bad because JVC was coming out with these DILA projectors that were only a few inches thick. I mean, they really did get them small. But Mitsubishi's the last company still making them. I would say get a direct view plasma or LCD.
Well, I'm not getting another one yet because...
Oh, good. You don't need one.
This one, I just can't...
You don't need one. Yeah, one of the problems with these is the bulb. After a few thousand hours, you're going to reach this point, and you're going to spend $400 or $500 on a new bulb, things like that.
I've had it for 3 years now, and it's still just as good as it had been.
Yep.
A friend of mine bought a bulb recently for $150.
Oh, that's good. That's good news. Yeah, that's good. If they've dropped the prices on bulbs, that's very good news. Yeah. Look at that. Boinks is right on the front page of the App Store, by the way, Oliver. You must be happy about that. I would say that, some people are going to say Windows would be a better choice. I think, Bob, for what you described, a MacBook Pro, they're really robust, well-made laptops. They cost a little more than Windows laptops, but I think that's because of the quality control and the parts are just higher quality. Now, one thing I would absolutely emphasize to you as you scan these things in is be backing them up.
Yes, I have. Now I have a couple of hard drives that I use for that. But I'm not going to scan into my desktop anymore.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think you'll like this.
Okay. Well, thank you, Leo.
Thanks, Bob. Great to talk to you. It's a great project, as I said, if you're retired, because you had some time. I started scanning them in, and I got a Epson scanner that has a special holder for slides. You do five at a time, and it takes about 3 or 4 minutes to do five at a time. And I did a little calculations, and I'd still be scanning when I'm 90. I decided not to. It was well worth paying for it. Sarah in Yorba Linda, and I think they did a better job than I was doing. Sarah in Yorba Linda, California. Hi, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call. I have two.
Thank you. Yes.
One of them is, I'm new to computers. I'm getting my very first computer. And
woo-hoo! Oh, boy, she's one of us. She's going to be one of us.
I wondered if you could recommend a good password manager, because I have no memory to remember passwords.
No one does. It's an interesting problem, because the best password is the hardest to remember. A good password is at least 10 random characters, punctuation marks, and digits. No one can remember that. 10 digits, maybe. That's your phone number, but not letters, upper and lower case, numbers, commas, dollar signs. No, it's got to be random so that there's no pattern. And not only that, you should have one unique password for everywhere you go, and you should change it every few months. Well, forget it. Nobody does that.
Oh.
What they end up doing is they make one password, they use it for all the sites, they write it on a Post-it note, and they stick it on their screen, and anybody who wants to get in can. So... So you're not alone. I'm in the same boat, and there is one program, absolutely the best ever, called LastPass. LastPass.com. Works Windows, Mac, Linux, works on every phone. It's just an incredible, it's free, although I would pay, there's a dollar a month pro version that I bought, the pro version, some of the features of the pro version I use. But you don't need to. It will generate secure passwords. It will remember them. All you have to remember is one master password.
Oh,
Sarah, you're going to love it. Everybody should be using this. And I have no association with them, but it's just a great program. LastPass.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, that's the number. Sarah, you're Belinda, California. You're next. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for calling in.
Hi there. I have one more question.
Oh, I just talked to you. Well, yes. Welcome back.
Well, I had two questions, and this is the second one. My new computer is going to be a laptop, and the neighbor said that I can use their Wi-Fi network, and I wondered, is that safe?
Depends what you mean by safe. That's very nice of them. That's very nice of your neighbors. You trust them.
Yes, that is nice. I wondered, that doesn't mean that anybody can drive by and get onto my computer, you know, from...
What you do, since they're being so generous to you, is you are going to help them by telling them how to secure this. So what they need to do is not have an open Wi-Fi spot that you and anybody else within 150 feet can use. That is dangerous.
Okay.
What you want to do is go over there and say, this is great. Thank you so much. Here's how I'd like to pay you back. Turn on WPA2 encryption on your router. If they go to their router configuration, usually it's in a browser, and right on the front page, encryption, turn it on. They'll give you several different choices. WPA2 is what you want to use. It'll say, okay, what's the password? You know the password. They know the password. You two are the only people who can use it, or anybody else to give the password to. You should know that anybody else who has the password can also kind of watch what's going on. But things like FireSheep, which is a really risky program, it's probably, in my best guess, is probably what was used to hack Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook page. FireSheep would allow somebody sitting on any computer on that open access spot to get to your Facebook account, to get to your Twitter account, to watch what you're doing. Watch your email. You don't want that.
Oh.
Now, but remember, you are going to trust your neighbor, right? Because they're going to be able to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. As long as you trust them, just say, neighbor, let me show you. Here's this thing called LastPass. It's really great. And as long as we're talking security, turn on WPA2 networking and give me the password. We'll share. We'll be the only ones who can use it.
Oh, all righty. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Now, there are newer routers, somebody's telling me in the chat room, Uncle Bick, that have guest network settings. Those are actually good. They basically create a separate network in addition to the internal network that's for guests. I still think the best thing to do, turn on WPA2. WPA2 prevents FireSheep from doing its thing. I haven't checked. The last time I checked, more than 2 million people had downloaded FireSheep. FireSheep is a free Firefox plugin, widely known, 2 million people have downloaded it, that lets you sit in a coffee shop with an open Wi-Fi access spot, see everybody who's using Facebook, Twitter, Google, all sorts of stuff, and pretend to be them. So this is what I imagine happened. Mark Zuckerberg went to a coffee shop in Palo Alto. He's feeling pretty good. He's worth $50 billion. He's feeling pretty happy. Logs on to Facebook, says, hey, I'm Mark Zuckerberg, and I'm worth $50 billion. Meanwhile, there's a guy sitting right next to him in the coffee shop who's saying, no, I'm Mark Zuckerberg, and he hacked his page. It's the kind of stuff that they did to Mark's Facebook page is exactly what you could do with FireSheep. If you have a router, SpC8470 in the chat room saying, I have a router that doesn't have WPA or WPA2. If you have an older router, it will only have WEP, W-E-P, encryption. That's better than nothing. And probably okay. But anybody who knows what they're doing can easily crack that in about 30 seconds. It's a simple, easily available program. No big deal. So I like WPA2. WEP is broken, basically. WEP was poorly designed and was quickly cracked. Jody, Las Vegas, Nevada. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jody.
Yes, I'm here. Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I had a question for you on HDTV. We have two HDTVs in our home. Both of them use Cox as our service provider. And we're trying to cut back on expenses. And was wondering, both of those TVs are hooked up to an HD box. We have a third television that doesn't have a box at all. It just runs physically. I guess it's just connected to the cable itself, so you get basic cable on that TV. Can you get basic cable on an HD TV? We don't really care necessarily about the quality, I guess, anymore so much, if it's going to save us substantially.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just wondering how you could.
You just call the cable company and say, I don't need this box anymore.
Right.
So what you're getting are analog channels. Now, the cable companies really don't want analog channels because they take up a lot of bandwidth on their cable.
Okay.
So they did a little sneaky little thing. You remember last year, it was a big deal. The broadcast stations went digital.
Yeah.
So the cable companies put out a lot of announcements. Oh, you're going to need a digital box. It had nothing to do with cable. It only had to do with broadcast. But they used that opportunity to move you to a digital box.
Uh-huh.
And what they've done is they've started to phase out those analog channels. That TV that's getting basic cable,
yeah,
is probably able to tune only analog channels. It really depends on the TV, but that's my guess.
Yeah, it's like the lower channels. I mean,
it's the lower channels. If the cable companies are restricted by the FCC from doing too much of this, but I think they have to keep the so-called lower channels in analog, but they would like to get rid of it and make everybody use a digital box.
Uh-huh.
But for several reasons. One, because even if it's not HD, they can at least rent it to you.
Right, well, they can charge you, yeah.
They charge you, but also it uses less bandwidth. And the analog signal uses more bandwidth than the digital signals.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, as long as you could, probably it's in all likelihood, if you're able to get it on that one TV, you can get it on the other ones. They could tune those channels.
And so what does that do to the quality of the HD TV? Does it really, are we going to see any difference? I mean, we obviously won't be able to get the HD channels.
Well, right. That's right, because those are all digital. Anything that you need a cable box for, you won't be able to get, probably.
Okay.
What will it look like? Well, it'll be standard definition, and most TVs do what they call upscaling. They improve the quality. Most TVs can do a fairly good job. I'm sure you have some standard definition channels right now on those TVs. Tune around till you find one.
Okay.
That's what it's going to look like. Or watch I Love Lucy. Or an old movie. That's what it's going to look like.
Okay, so it's not going to be snow.
Oh, I don't think so. No, if there are analog channels, you'll be able to tune them. You could try it right now. Take the cable box off.
Oh, really?
Connect directly to the TV. You'll go into the TV's menu and you'll say scan. Most TVs have tuners. Now, some TVs don't have tuners anymore. If it doesn't have a tuner, you won't be able to do anything. But most TVs have a tuner in it. You can look in your menu or your manual and you'll see, scan the cable for channels. Do that, and you'll see exactly what channels you can get and what not get. None of them will be HD over the cable.
Okay, and that's a scan that you do with the television itself, right?
The television, because what we're saying is use the TV as a tuner, not the cable box.
Right, right. Okay, so just experiment with it, see what we get.
Yeah, see what the capabilities are of that TV. Most TVs have tuners of some kind in them.
Okay. All right, great. That helps out a lot.
It won't look horrible. You're watching more standard definition television than you realize, even with your HD box.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. All old TV shows are standard definition. You ever watch Hawaii 5-0? That ain't HD.
Right,
any old TV show you watch is standard definition.
Okay.
Now, you should also, you're in Las Vegas, you can also look at getting, if you really want to save money, over-the-air HD TV. Which will look fantastic. You don't even need really much of anything except an antenna. That's another choice that's very affordable, like free. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866 the number 2 get net to get DSL Extreme. We were talking earlier about Mac World Expo, which just happened in San Francisco this past week, just ended yesterday. It ain't no CES. Let's put it that way. It's gotten a lot smaller. I can remember in years past when Macworld Expo would tie up traffic in San Francisco for days. You wouldn't be able to go anywhere near the convention center. It's not that big anymore, unfortunately. And it's not really much about the Mac anymore. Oliver Breidenbach is with me. He's a Mac developer at Boinx.com, B-O-I-N-X.com. They do a lot of different really cool software. You didn't even have a booth this year.
No, we didn't, no.
Well, you know, HP was the biggest company with a booth. There's no Apple at Macworld anymore. Hasn't been for the last couple of Macworld Expos. Mostly, it seems like an accessory show at this point. iPad and iPod accessories.
Yeah, lots of that stuff.
And iPhones.
Also, really crazy stuff, right? Like the guys with the ultrasound therapy things.
There's always been, I don't know why, but maybe it's Mac. Maybe it's because it's San Francisco. Maybe it's because it's Mac users. But there's always been kind of some strange side booths where you get weird massage chairs and things like that.
Yeah, but actually, I missed the people who gave you actual massage, right?
Now, that would have been nice, yeah. I guess they weren't there either, huh? Anyway, it's no news really comes out of Macworld Expo anymore now that Apple doesn't make big announcements there. In fact, Apple last year announced the iPad a couple of weeks after Macworld Expo. Everybody at Macworld Expo last year was wondering what the iPad was going to bring with it, what it would herald, what it would be like. Maybe they announced it the week before. Maybe?
Yeah. They had like a session on the iPad where they had fake iPads.
They had cardboard iPads. so, it's a fascinating scene. If you're a Mac person, the conference schedule is much better. There's lots of great conferences, professional training, that kind of thing. But the expo itself isn't really a huge thing, and I have nothing to report.
No, there was some nice little gems, you know, like the guys with the universal remote for your iPhone.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
You were talking about the universal remote.
Yeah,
just the other hour.
So there's it's gems. You have to kind of look around the little small booths, things like that. Yeah. So that's what you like. What was the name of that? Do you remember?
No, I it was on the Dr. Bot booth, but
okay. So it's an iPhone app. Or would it require, must have had some hardware in it as well.
Yeah, it's a little dongle thing that you attach to the iPhone and then app to it. Yes, something like that.
Something like this. Yeah, I have this doesn't work that well. This is it's infrared remote that plugs into the audio port of the iPhone. Yeah. But they don't it knows about very little.
They asked what was plugging into the connector.
Yeah.
And that it gives you much more reliability.
8888 Ask Leo's the number. Let's get back to the phones. In other words, nothing to see here. Move along. Victor on the line from Sherman Oaks, California. Hey, Victor.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Wonderful. Long time listener, first time caller.
Okay. Welcome.
I am excited that the iPhone is coming to Verizon, and it's rumored that the AT&T is going to get the iPhone 5 June, July. Maybe you'd know maybe better than.
No, I know nothing. In fact, no one knows anything. And anybody who says they know something is making it up. Apple is sealed tighter than a drum. Nobody gets any information out of Apple unless something happens unusual, as happened last year when an engineer left an iPhone 4 on a bar stool. We don't know what the iPhone 5 will be. We don't know whether Verizon will get it at the same time as AT&T. We don't know if I think it's conceivable that other carriers like Sprint and T-Mobile may get an iPhone at the same time, but we don't know. Anything I say would be pure speculation. You want to hear my speculation?
Sure. I hate to buy my iPhone 4 on February 10th and then June 5 comes out. I'd be really disappointed.
Just understand that what I'm saying here is, you know, not based on any information because Apple doesn't say.
Sure.
But I could tell you, you know, it's pretty likely that there'll be an iPhone announced and shipping in June because it has been for the last 3 years or 4 years. Every June, there's a new iPhone. The first iPhone came out in June 2007. The iPhone 3 came out in June 2008, the 3G, then the 3GS, then the iPhone 4, June 2010. So I would say June 2011, yeah, there's probably a new phone. Will Verizon have it? Who knows? I would be very angry if I were Verizon and I didn't get it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I would guess that the iPhone 5 will come out everywhere that the iPhone 4 is, which is going to upset some Verizon customers who signed up for a two-year deal for a 4 4 months before a new one came out. But that's, you know, that's business. I don't think the iPhone 5, if that's what they call it, they may not. They may call it the 4S. They may call it, who knows what they're going to call it. But I don't think the next iPhone will have significant differences from the current iPhone. Most likely, it'll be a dual processor. It'll be a faster phone. That's probably going to be the biggest difference.
Got it.
Yeah.
The iPad might have a camera. I think that'll come
iPad out. Will almost certainly have a camera. That will probably be out in April. Apple likes these yearly release dates. It'll probably have a back camera and a front-facing camera. Some say improved, maybe even Retina display. That would add so much to the price of the iPad. I don't think that's likely. They may improve the resolution, but not that much. Because remember, the price is very important for Apple on the iPad. They've got to have a $500 iPad. They can't eliminate that. They have to have that. Biggest question for Verizon customers, if you ask me, is will the next iPhone and Verizon support the Verizon 4G network? And my guess is that it will not. Apple's very slow. Remember, when Apple came out with the iPhone, it wasn't 3G. It was Edge only. It took them a year to get to 3G on the original iPhone. So it's, even though Verizon's making a lot of hay talking about their 4G network, and they say 245 cities by the end of 2011, part of the problem is, of course, that AT&T's 4G is a little bit behind that. I just don't see an LTE, that's what the Verizon 4G technology is called, the faster data network. I just don't see a 4G iPhone this year. But who knows?
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, in other words, would you be disappointed if you bought an iPhone 4 now? Probably not. The thing that maybe, you know, if you really want speed, I think I would hold off. I bet a lot of developers like you, Oliver, are saying, gee, we'd really like to get a crack at an A5, a dual-core, you know, A9-based processor, and that would be pretty exciting. But, I don't, you know, the resolution of the iPhone screen then can't go up any higher. It's as high as you can get, pretty much. Camera's great. I don't know what you'd do to fix that. I have heard little rumors going around that there may be some significant changes in the operating system, that notifications might be fixed, perhaps. There's something that really the iPhone does poorly. The foldering system might be improved. I have heard some, the multitasking might be improved. I've heard rumors that the next generation iPhone software might be where you see most of the improvement. And certainly if you get a faster processor in there, you could do a lot more.
That will help, yeah.
Yeah, that's got to happen, right? Oliver says, please.
Yes, please.
Anybody who makes software like Boinks does, that really is CPU intensive, you want to see more hardware. You want to see more processor speed.
Yeah, always.
More
you
RAM.
You can't have enough power.
There's not a lot of RAM right now in the iPhone.
No, yeah. Well,
it's what, 256?
Yeah, it's. I don't actually know exactly. But
I can't remember if it's 256 megabytes, yes, or 512, but it's low.
It's not that much. Yeah, and so, if you want to do photos, that is especially a problem. Right?
More RAM. The problem with more RAM is these days, that's not something consumers know or care about. It's one of the reasons neither of us knows how much RAM's in the iPhone. It's not something people talk about anymore. And again, it's all speculation. Apple could throw us for a loop. We won't know till they announce it. And I suspect they won't announce it till May or maybe even June. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. It's hammer time. Just a few more minutes to go. We will keep answering calls, though, after I get off the air. So keep those calls coming in. And if you're on the line, hang on the line. We will get to each and every one of you at 888-ASK-LEO. Let's see here. John in Austin, Texas. Hey, John, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, longtime watcher, listener, back to the Ziff Davis days. How you doing?
Oh, my. Well, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Hey, listen, my my deal is I've got an LG Vortex that I've recently got here, and I hate all the LG apps on here, all the bloatware. So
Yeah.
I want to root it, but I'm a little afraid to. I can't afford to brick my phone. So
you won't brick it.
I won't brick
it. You won't brick it, no. As long as you use a reliable rooting source. So Android is an open source operating system. And as a result, how it works is very well known because anybody who's interested can look at it. So it was considerably easier. It is considerably easier to give you root access on an Android phone than it is, say, to jailbreak an iPhone. It takes a lot of clever hacking to jailbreak an iPhone. Rooting an Android phone, which is essentially the same thing. What rooting does is it gives you full access to the phone's features. And it means you have administrative rights to the phone. It's your phone. You ought to have administrative rights to it, of course. Nothing wrong with that. And rooting it is not a difficult thing to do. In fact, in some cases, it's a simple command. Let me ask the chat room if they have a is it XDA developers? Would you recommend that for rooting the Vortex? I'm not sure. You can always Google rooting the Vortex, but I would be careful. This is the real risk, is that there are bad guys, malicious people out there who would say, yeah, I can root it for you. And won't in reality be doing that. They'll be doing something else. XDA-developers.com. They're the kind of keepers of the rooting flame for Android, and they do, in fact, have a procedure for doing it on the Vortex. So just search for XDA developers Vortex root, and you'll find it. And it's safe.
So is there a way to back it up pretty well?
Well, you're always backed up with Android because Android's syncing with all your Google stuff, so everything's in the cloud. Your apps, it remembers, so that's one of the nicest features about an Android phone. You get a new Android phone, you log in, it actually says, oh, let me copy all your apps, and it downloads the apps for you. Wouldn't be a bad idea to go to download an app called AppBrain that is a really very cool third-party app that keeps track of your apps. It's got some social elements. You can share your apps with other people, you can see what apps I use. It's a great way to find out about great apps on the Android platform. And it will keep track of all the apps you have on your different Android phones. And when you get a new phone, you can just copy them all over automatically.
Okay.
There is a guide on Android forums. In fact, let's put that link in the show notes, James. It's in the chat room right now. It's the definitive, and this is a safe place, too, to get information in the Android forums, the definitive guide to rooting the LG Vortex. So if you go to androidforums.com and search for LG Vortex, or click the link in our website, techguylabs.com, all sorts of stuff in there. And yes, it's safe. The Motorola Droid X, there was some talk that Motorola put something in there that if you tried to root it, it would brick it. I think they've even gotten around that. That's a pretty nasty thing for somebody to do. Motorola should be ashamed of themselves for doing it. But that, really, it's your phone. Come on. You're telling me Verizon, you're telling me AT&T, you're telling me T-Mobile, you're telling me Motorola, Samsung, HTC, that I own this piece of hardware, which I'm spending, by the way, an exorbitant amount of money for, that I shouldn't have administrative access? What if you bought a computer and they said, oh, yeah, you could be a limited user, but you can't have full access? That wouldn't be cool. That wouldn't be okay. That phone, that Vortex, yeah, maybe it only cost you $200 when you signed up. But then it's another $100 a month for 2 years. That's a $2,600 computer, and you don't have administrative access? Forget that. Mm-mm-mm. Oh, no, you didn't. All right. Let me move on. Jim is in Los Angeles. He wants... Oh, we already talked to him about the Verizon phone. Let's see. I guess our next caller will be Jerry in Running Springs, California. Wants to get info out of an iPad. Ha-ha! Good luck. Oh, no, you didn't. Apple not fond of this. We'll talk about it in a minute. Before we do that, though, I got to tell you about Carbonite. Carbonite, it's backup done right. There, you, I got some numbers for you. Three numbers for you. Today's the day that one of three things could happen to you on your computer. It crashes, or a virus worms its way into your hard drive, or you accidentally drop your laptop or leave it at the airport. And if one of those three things happens, in an instant, your pictures, your priceless files, lost forever. Now how do you feel? So before any of those things happen to you, remember these three words: Carbonite Online Backup. There are three reasons to get Carbonite today. Carbonite's easy. Anyone can get started at Carbonite.com. Carbonite is automatic. Your pictures and the other files on your computer are backed up every time you're online without slowing you or the computer down. And Carbonite gives you, and I love this feature, anytime, anywhere access to your backed up files from any computer or on your smartphone with a free Carbonite app. So even before disaster strikes, you still have this great sharing capability. Get Carbonite today before you need it, because frankly, after you need it, too late. Unlimited backup, PC or Mac, just $55 a year at Carbonite.com. That's 15 cents a day, or start your free trial for 15 days at Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo. And if you decide to buy, you get 2 free months as well. But you got to use my name, Leo. Back it up to get it back at Carbonite.com. Offer code Leo. So did we talk to Jim or not? I can't remember. Or maybe it's just a repeat of the question. Jim, did I talk to you already?
Oh, not yet.
So you want to know the kind of the same thing is, should you get a Verizon iPhone now or wait?
No, well, a little different. I'm wondering to reserve it now or instead get the HTC Android that's going to be on 4G in April on Verizon.
Ah, yes. I do like that new HTC phone that they announced at CES. What was it called? Like the robot?
The Thunderbolt.
Thunderbolt.
Yeah.
It's big screen. It's beautiful. I'm an Android fan. In fact, to be honest with you, Android's gotten so far ahead of Apple in some regards that when I look at an iPhone, I feel like, boy, that's old technology.
Really?
You just look at this. Yeah, you look at the screen and like, well, what can you do with an iPhone? Well, it's just all the icons in a grid. That's all you can do. You look at an Android phone, you have the capability of putting widgets on there. I could see what the weather is. I could see what, you know, I mean, but all you got on the iPhone is a grid. Oh, now they got folders. Ooh. Camera's really good, although I have to say the camera on my Nexus S is just about as good. I think the only big difference on the iPhone these days is the App Store. And there are still, especially in photography, a range and a array of quality apps that you just don't have yet on Android. How long will that be? Oliver, are you going to do Android apps ever?
I wouldn't say never.
You have to think about it, don't you? Because yes. It's such a big market.
Yeah, but it's quite different from the development standpoint. So.
Right. You get new programmers.
Yeah.
Because you're writing in Java now.
Yeah, well.
Oliver does.
To do that.
Oliver is company CEO of a company called Boinks that does a couple of different iOS apps. I think Android's really caught up in many ways and in suppressed in many other ways, the voice dictation and so forth. So, but to answer your question, Jim.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. It's a very personal decision. Your cell phone is as personal as a computer gets, isn't it? You're going to be holding it to your head, right there up next to your ear. You're practically snuggling it every day. And so there are plenty of people who are listening to me right now are saying, Leo, no question, it's an iPhone, no question. I think probably Oliver's one of those people. And then there are other people who will say, no question, Leo, no question, it's obviously Android.
But the 4G is a big improvement, right? So.
Yeah, I don't know if and you won't get 4G on the current iPhone on Verizon, and I don't think you'll get it on the next one. So if that's, you know, really that's what it comes down to. What are you going to do with it? What's the most important thing for you? If, for instance, 4G is important, then I'd absolutely get the Thunderbolt. If you don't like the Apple keyboard, which I don't, the Android allows, there's, you know, 4 or 5 different keyboard styles and techniques that you can use that are great because it's open. Anybody can develop for it. You don't have to get, Apple will not approve third-party keyboards. But you don't have to ask approval to put it on Android. Anybody can. So I think there's a lot. I think there's a lot of good stuff about Android. If 4G is important to you, I would not hesitate. I haven't played with the Thunderbolt. I mean, I played with it at CES, but I haven't used it in real world circumstances. It looks a lot like these other 4.3-inch Android phones. I think it looks very, very sweet, and it does have a dual core processor, which is another nice thing that the iPhone 4 does not.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're inclined towards Android, go for it, Jim.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Geek Week. Don't forget Scott Wilkinson next week talking home theater.